And a warm welcome to Perspectives, our program that reports the issues from the viewpoints of our correspondents. My name is Kingsley Obin Chire. In this edition, the motorcycles are disregarded laws in Nana's predicament a year on. Child marriage from cold statistics to real human lives taking the bull by the horns. And also, our law in a topsy-turvy disarray where no police means no law. Please be our guest. And now to the stories. Any reference to this issue is one that points directly at our inability as a country to enforce regulations. Sometimes, the natural question is, why do we have these laws if we are not prepared to ensure that they are obeyed? Motorcycles being used for commercial business? What has the law say? By now, it is common knowledge that one of the beautiful things in our law books is the one that prohibits it. But that is where the law ends. Apart from using it for the unprescribed activities, they virtually go against almost all traffic regulations. Correspondent Nana Momari remembers this day with how once disregard for traffic rules led her into an uncomfortable situation. It all started like this at a traffic light.
Ajay!
That was the last sound I heard and made on 1st July 2016, exactly a year today, when I was hit by a motorcycle on a zebra crossing on my way home from work when the traffic light had turned red. I then blacked out on the street. Regaining consciousness, I found myself sitting in a wheelchair at the Ridge Hospital. In front of me were two young boys with swollen heads and damaged jaws with blood all over them. On my left was my younger sister holding eyes on my forehead. And turning to my right, I realized the damage done to my right arm, an open fracture. I also had a swollen head, fractured fingers, sores all over my body, and my dress torn and soaked in blood. Whilst my older brother and a colleague handled hospital procedures, my arm was stitched and I was immediately referred to the 37 Military Hospital for further treatment. I ran all the scans and x-rays one could think of from head to toe. This was to avoid any internal complications. The pain was unbearable. It took the grace of God to see me through that night. The next morning, my mother, siblings, and some colleagues visited. When I inquired about the two young boys I saw the night before, I was told they were the motor riders who hit me, and they had apparently rented the motorcycle for the day. I later found out they were between the ages of 15 and 17 years. I began to wonder how it all happened, because I was really extra careful that evening. I recall walking with a colleague from work that day. After crossing the first two lanes of the road, I saw a motorcycle approaching in the middle of the second two lanes of the road. Frank, as I call him, said we should hurry and cross, but I told him to wait because motor riders do not respect traffic lights. So we waited for the motorcycle to stop. Little did we know that another motorcycle was approaching with full speed from the other end of the lane close to the pedestrian walkway. Lucky for Frank, I took the first step and he was behind. Otherwise, we would have both been hit that evening. Frank then rushed me to the hospital and got in touch with my family. Oh yes, before I forget, my phone was stolen when I was on the verge of dying. I was later told the motorcycle also miraculously vanished from the scene of the accident. Isn't that amazing? This only happens in Ghana. Doctors upon doctors examined me, checkups upon checkups, and finally resorting to herbal treatments to get me back on my feet. But enough of my story. Let's go back to motorcycle riders and traffic lights. I'm tempted to ask, what exactly is the issue when it comes to motor riders respecting traffic regulations? Is it a taboo for motor riders to stop when the traffic light turns red? What are the authorities in charge, such as the MTTU, DVLA, security officers, and all Ghanaians doing about this menace, which is claiming precious, able-bodied, and potential future leaders who could have had positive impact on society? I ask again, Who monitors motorcycle rental services? Do they rent out helmets as they do motorcycles? Are some of these motorcycles even registered? The way they ride sometimes make me wonder if these riders go through the right procedures to obtain their licenses. I always get sad on my way home from work when I have to cross that same road and I see motor riders cross the red light most of the time. What even marvels me the most is a motor rider jumping a red light with a security officer dressed in uniform sitting behind him smiling, seeing nothing wrong with it. They only see something wrong when an accident occurs. This shows that the laws only work when an issue crops up in Ghana. To me, first and foremost, to curb the menace, there is a need for attitudinal change as individuals and to start respecting traffic regulations to save lives. I am lucky and grateful to God to have survived. I am also grateful to my family, Frank, and every individual who one way or the other showed love and concern. May the Lord richly bless you all. I know I am not the first to have been hit by a motorcycle on that road, and as sad as it may sound, I have to admit I might not be the last, but I believe if we all change our attitude towards traffic regulations and stop being lawless citizens, lives would be saved.
Nana Momari, it is an outmoded cultural practice, but one of the surviving actions that deprive more than 15 million girls of their right to education and choice. It is surprising to hear that 28 girls are married every minute, and every 2 seconds, a girl below 18 gets married. Some think it is a lot of noise about nothing, like colleague Andrew Blay, till he was confronted with the case of Vida. It made him sit down to reflect. As to what happened, Andy has more for us here.
Dear cherished listener, I used to think the issue of child marriage was overhyped. In other words, I thought it was given unmerited media and public attention. This was my view because I thought the act was a mirage in this 21st century and was unnecessary for us to sacrifice productive time to either discuss or create awareness of it. I held on to this view until I was caught up with the story of a class 3 pupil I taught. I will call her Vida. Now, I came into contact with her mind-blowing story during a voluntary service I rendered to the people of Pachel, a Konkomba village in the northern region of Ghana, in 2014. During my teaching at the time, I observed that Vida was not happy and was often absent-minded. I also discovered that the 17-year-old girl was hotcake for male partners, both young and old, married and unmarried, to satisfy their libidinous quest for sex. I noticed that the issue troubled Vida to the extent that it was affecting her studies. Out of curiosity, I invited her to my office in order to get to the bottom of the matter. Listeners, my tiny eyeballs were flooded with tears when Vida recounted to me in tears how she was forced to marry a 50-year-old man in exchange for his grown-up daughter who was to be married by Vida's elder brother. She painstakingly narrated the horrific treatment meted out to her by her husband who was imposed on her in the 3-year marriage with him. This means that Vida was given into marriage at the age of 14. In demystifying the mystery behind the breakneck rate of sexual harassment from the numerous men in the community, Vida indicated that she reported her agony to the Domestic and Victim Support Unit of the Ghana Police Service for intervention. Her parents were enraged and excommunicated her from the community for disobeying them and reporting them to a higher authority. Vida had no choice but to stay with her married sister and her husband at Pachel. She explained that, per the tradition of Pachel, it was an abomination for the village folk to either marry or have sexual relationship among themselves since they were all related by blood. They are only required to marry outsiders and those from the surrounding communities. Therefore, almost all the men of Pachel chased Vida like an earthworm found in the midst of soldier ants because she was not a native of the village. She emphasized that the pressure from her relatives and community will not deter her from achieving her academic goals. It was Vida's story which made me appreciate the fact that child marriage, whereby one or both prospective spouses are below 18 years, indeed exists in this 21st century. I see it not only as an outmoded cultural practice, but a fundamental human rights issue. Well, up till now, I often question myself what the future holds for Vaida, and could she be in the same boat with other girls in other communities? Your guess is as good as mine. To shape my gossip on the matter, I decided to find out how common the practice has been. Fortunately, I chanced on the data released by UNICEF in July 2014. According to the data, 15 million girls worldwide marry before their 18th birthday. A breakdown of the statistics indicates that 41,000 girls get married every day. That is not shocking enough. The data indicates that 28 girls are married every minute, and the mother of all the revelations, a girl below the age of 18, is married every 2 seconds. I got to know that although South Asia records the highest rate of child marriage, its prevalence in sub-Saharan Africa, including Ghana, is equally alarming. This calls for stringent national policies and conscious efforts to stop it. It is argued that if the canker is not addressed, its spread in Ghana as well as the sub-Saharan African region will double by 2050 and will overtake South Asia to become the region with the largest rate of child marriages. Historically, how had the prevalent rate of child marriages been? It is estimated that more than 700 million women worldwide living today were married before they turned 18. Out of this number, more than 1 out of 3 got married before the age of 15. It is worthy to note that 40% of girls in sub-Saharan Africa marry before they turn 18 years. Now, let me narrow my statistics down to Ghana. On the average, 1 out of 5 girls in Ghana is married before they attain the age of consent. The prevalence rate in the 3 regions of the north is 34%, while 5% are married below 15 years. It is said that girls from rural areas are twice more likely to become child brides than those in urban areas. Similarly, girls from poorer homes are 4 times more likely to suffer this fate than those from wealthy homes. You agree with me that the menace adversely affects both the victims and the country at large. One interesting aspect of child marriage is that the girls are often given into marriage to people who are perceived to be rich in such communities whose wealth in actual fact amounts to nothing. Few years after marrying such girls, they are either unable to take proper care of them and their wards, or they die, leaving the poor girls to face the challenging and competitive life single-handedly. The act breeds high mortality and health-related cases like obstetric fistula with its attendant risks. Girls who go through this fate are more exposed to sexually transmitted diseases since they are not able to assert their right to practice safe sex. How can I rest on this matter, having seen the perilous nature of its effects on more than 260,000 Ghanaian girls, coupled with the possible bleak future which could await Vaida and other victims? This explains why the need to gossip on it often haunts me. If the widely quoted assertion by Ghana's famous former educationist, Dr. Kwejiri Agri, that, and I quote, "If you educate a man, you educate an individual, and if you educate a woman, you educate a nation," unquote, is true, then I can confidently say with much certainty that if we give a boy child into early marriage, we ruin the future of an individual, and if we give a girl child into early marriage, we ruin the future of a whole nation. Hence, the need to pool resources together to make the unquenchable desire to see the end of child marriage a success. On its effects on the nation, early marriage brings about high dependency ratio and diminishes socio-economic prosperity and development. Section 101 of the Criminal Offences Act 1960, Act 29, defines sex with a child under 16 years as an offence which shall be liable to imprisonment for a term not less than 7 years and not more than 25 years. Although government and several NGOs have helped in diverse ways in curbing the canker of child marriage, it is gratifying that the Gender Ministry is not leaving any stone unturned with the launch of the 5-year campaign to end child marriage in Ghana. The ball now lies in the court of the media to also up their game in the campaign against child marriage. Government must continue in earnest with the implementation of its social intervention programs like the Free Education, One District, One Factory, One Village, One Dam, LEAP, Youth Employment, and SADA. The successful implementation of such policies will undoubtedly help to reduce the prevalence of child marriage and its devastating effects on vulnerable girls.
Andrew Blee filed that report. You are listening to Perspectives, and we are also available at GBC Online. Just log on to gbcghana.com and check on podcast, and you'll get a lot of editions. We are moving on. What is the meaning of the law to you? For many in recent times, it is the presence of the police or any law enforcement authority deployed to maintain order. In different facets of our life, people look out for what the law says and how easy it is to disregard it if possible. Footballers want to do it on the blind side of the referees. Students want to cheat in examinations when they think an invigilator is not watching. And some workers will prefer to malinger when they think supervisors may not see them or find out. In this piece, Yours Sincerely digs deeper into the issue where we equate the law to the police or anyone playing a similar role. It used to be quite unique to commercial vehicle operators, the trotros and taxis to be precise, to look out for the police or traffic wardens on the road. It was as if they had a mantra that says, where there is no police, there is no law, and anybody can do whatever they desired. If it is the trotsky, they will quickly ask the meat to check whether there is a policeman close to the zone. Shahomami, Basem Yifahun. That's how they often put it in the local language. Before long, there they go. And if there are so many of them, you find additional lanes created and a melee of some sort as everybody struggles to get to his or her destination. The least said of confusion and the creation of a grid and seeming lockdowns at intersections, the better. Some of the law-abiding ones will not understand why, after spending so much time, they should make way for those whose credo is disorder. In the long run, no one moves. Chaos is but a small word to describe what happens. If you happen to live in a dense traffic zone, you have a regular weekday early morning and evening encounter with this situation. Not long ago, I saw that policemen have been detailed to the Domi Pilatu road, where many drivers have become adherents of the anti-order society, as I choose to call it. Those who flout the rule are gently invited aside by the personnel posted there to sort out a few issues. Even if they are told to go and sin no more, the invitation to park and explain their action that shows no love to other motorists is a lot of punishment for anyone in a hurry. As indicated in the opening, however, it used to be commercial drivers. We call them hot men. They have to render account at the end of the day. They will forever remind you about the fact that they need their sales by evening and cannot afford the snail-paced traffic. However, the trend has changed significantly in recent times. You find well-dressed gentlemen and ladies. Yes, you heard right. Ladies being active participants in this anti-order game. Sometimes, the effrontery with which it is done is amazing, and those who are law-abiding get the usual Ghanaian tag of too known. When the police is around, it means the law has shown up for many people. The traffic is a classical case of how we equate the law to the police. Funnily, as citizens, we express approval or disapproval based on where we stand on the divide of disorder. I have seen on countless occasions, as a trotsky passenger, how some hail the move of drivers who flout the regulations. Some are in silent agreement with the move. Dissenting voices in some of these vehicles even receive a backlash, and they are asked whether they are not in a hurry. they are compelled to be willing partners. When the law shows up in the form of the police, it is some of these same passengers who will excoriate to the zenith, and they do whatever they can to say that what has been done is not right. They will recollect all the sins of the police and justify why the offending one should be left off the hook, only if they had spent a fraction of that time lecturing the driver to follow the rules. The other side of this conversation is how the code of disorder is winning more apostles with each passing day, and some of us are compelled to look on rather helplessly. At most, we lift our pens, and unfortunately, that is where it seems to end. I have seen people scatter scratches around knowing very well it should not be done. They test the waters with something of a very temporary nature. After some time, they realize that the law after all is dead and nothing will happen. Before long, you see some sand and cement and the floor turns to concrete and hooray, here comes a permanent structure. The law did not appear, whether in the form of the police or the metropolitan, municipal or district official. These ones will generate waste. How is it managed? Are we still surprised that the floods in parts of Accra has assumed a perennial nature? There was no law around when the rubbish was being given a free passage in the waterway. I have tried so much to resist the temptation to write on the floods in Accra, because if I have to compile what I have written over the period on it, it will be a voluminous compilation. The little I would say is that until we start looking at the problem from the roots, where from the Ebru Hills, the land that should slow down the flow of water to the coast is not deprived of its ability to do so, I'm afraid to be a harbinger of bad news. And unfortunately, we shall always reserve some choice words for whoever is the mayor. Do you see the trend of the argument? There is no environment police around, so we clear the greenery, destroy the peri-urban zone, and create a concrete jungle. Coupled with the climate change issues, the dividends are what we see even when it drizzles. It is a pathetic situation to see those who might not have contributed to the situation suffering because some did not see the police and therefore assumed the law was in a coma of some sort. Disorder and lack of respect for establishment exists so much that even religious institutions seem to promote it. Otherwise, why should they cede their platforms to politicians to talk about issues that divide? A platform that should unite people of different persuasions. The sad part is to move through town to see the eyesore created by posting of posters of one religious event or the other at places where it should not even be in the first place. To prevent the nasty postings, the Accra Metropolitan Assembly painted some places in national colors. Whilst it brought some semblance of order, the anti-law and anti-order elements have moved to deface some of these places. The Achimota Overhead is one of such places. How do these religious organizations then help people to be law-abiding? The bus sheds for their bus rapid transit has not been spared either. The crusade, or whatever they call it, posters have created such an eyesore as if to say, who cares? No one can take us on. Why should new facilities being put up suffer such a fate? But why should I be surprised if disorder seems to be reigning supreme and sometimes we explain it away as what it means to have democracy? How did we get it so wrong as a people? The right attitude seems to have been completely abandoned, and it appears we applaud those who rise against establishment. They show bravado, we think. Certainly, we need a new script for progress with this level of defiance that we see. I raise these issues in comparison with what happens elsewhere. We are quick to observe the order we see elsewhere. We comment on it and admire it. We tell all others about it, and yet when we have the opportunity to do same at home, then we wait to see the law in the form of a human before doing what is right. Many now point to Kigali as an example in what can be described as a clean city. How did they do it? Same humans, same Africans. There can be all the arguments about their system, but no one should fail to appreciate the mental adjustment program they have gone through. Dropping even a toffee wrapper is anathema to their social well-being. Their city briefs, based on their recent history, I asked a young man there recently how their media helps their cause, and it is good to note that they have imbibed the essence of supporting development and social cohesion. Long after I have spoken to him and paying another visit to what stands as a perpetual reminder of how some in the media can wreck a whole nation, the Kigali Genocide Memorial, I asked how the media here is using all the existing lessons. If on a regular basis, sections run a counter-development agenda and raise tension instead of helping in the mental adjustment of people, where are we going to be? I hate to say this, but it appears some sections of the media are happy creating iconoclasts, those who challenge any forward-looking principle so that it will be run to the ground. One Saturday in the month is set aside for cleanup, and we were made to understand that it works, and the city status is evidence of it. No radio station will start a contrary agenda to it, such that a platform will be created for others to come and question why it should be so, because they pay their taxes. Sometimes we ask questions because we are seeing how possible it is for those in Accra to adhere to sanitation standards. In recent history, just before the Non-Aligned Movement Summit in 1989, people were cautious not to drop any litter. You never know who was watching, and that might create a problem for you. Raising this issue somewhere, someone was quick to point to which regime it was, and also the fact that it was only the public broadcaster that we had at the time, so focused on what should be done right, in spite of whatever challenge there was with that monopoly. Yet, is it right to wait for someone to monitor before we do what should be done? This is the question I keep coming to. When we say systems should work and quickly cite President Obama's statement in Accra, how do we as players within the system make it work? Is it always an issue of no police, no law? Ghanaians in London know about what is called the congestion charge, where if you are coming from some parts, you need to pay an amount before crossing into central London. If you do not do it, you get your fine. No police stops you along the way. They obey the rules. Why is it so difficult not to obey simple ones in relation to building, noise-making, trading, and the age-old waste management rules? Only if we play our part, then we shall see the positive dividends. But sometimes, when we touch on these ones, I ask, who is this one talking plenty in an era where some think underpants should be exhibited over trousers? Who is this person who thinks radio should be used productively and not be used to raise tension? Yet, such is life. Did you hear the statement that said that in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act? George Orwell said so long ago. But did our sages not also say that the only wish of the one without a cloth is to have the game of Asafo being played perpetually? In that game, there is always someone without a cloth, but as to the real one who has none, it is difficult to tell. I have said my part, and that is where we end it all for today. On behalf of Joyce Jechi, I am Kingsley Obinchere, but once again we say you can visit GBC Online by logging on to gbcghana.com, check on podcast, and you can listen to other perspectives programs. Your quick text line is 02-44-538-168. 02-44-538-168. Please be our guest, same time,